We got to talk a little Guardians. So we head out to the Wise Heart Right, We Make It Right call. Kyle Wright hotline, lot to discuss there as well. And to do it, we bring on our good friend over there on Locked On Guardians, Justin Latta, joining us now. Justin, what's going on?
Well, not much. I'm glad I was not at the Guardians game Saturday, so I didn't come down with some sort of injury.
That is a big plus. I mean, if you were there, you're walking away with a broken bone or a contusion. It felt like it.
Yeah, I think everybody left. There was, three players, an umpire left. I saw some people saying there was, a security guard that also went down. So it was it wasn't Friday the 13th, but it was Saturday the 13th.
It definitely had some bad feelings to it. And obviously, I mean, the big one that we're going to have to hit on is Jose Ramirez, because this is obviously, we're talking about DeLauder is a contusion, Angel Martinez is a contusion, but Jose's got a broken hammock bone, which these things are typically anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. And usually, if I had to guess, probably a little bit on the longer side. I mean, what is the expectation, I guess, right now with the injury, the way that you see it? Timeline you would expect Jose Ramirez to be down?
Yeah, he hasn't given a firm timeline, or the team hasn't yet. I'd imagine we'll hear more Tuesday or Wednesday. So in 2019, when Jose had this in his other wrist, he was originally supposed to be out 5 to 7 weeks. He came back in 30 days, so it's 4 weeks, no shock there. It was a little bit different, though, because he was, 7 years younger, and there were no minor league games left when he was coming back, so he couldn't rehab. So he came straight back, and Cleveland was trying to chase down a playoff spot, so there was a little more urgency. And, if you remember, he hit the grand slam and sprint homer in his first two at-bats back with no rehab at-bats, which is ridiculous. Did not end up playing again, though, because the Guardians fell, or the Indians at the time, I guess, fell out of the playoff race, and his wrist was bothering him. So I kind of wonder if, A, the timing of things, and B, his a little more advanced age the last 7 years, if they will be a little more conservative on the timeline with that, because they're going to want him to come back and stay back versus coming back too soon and hurting that wrist again. So, I mean, I've seen 5 to 7 weeks. Vinny Pasquantino just had the same surgery, and they're saying 4 to 6. So, yeah, I think 5 to 7 probably is that good range for him. Probably four. Yeah, if you say 4 to 7, I'd probably err on the side of 6 weeks.
I mean, beyond, obviously, we know this isn't an injury that typically has any long-term effects on a player, right? You come back and you're able to be the same player for years and years after. It's not like you're tearing an ACL. But we do look at this, and I guess the immediate of Jose coming back, is there a fear of lack of power? And obviously, I mean, we talked a little bit right there about re-injury.
Yeah, in the past, so some of the players will see a decrease in power just because you have a harder time strengthening the wrist coming back. And that's the danger of coming back too early, is the wrist isn't strong enough to handle that bone not being there. I mean, you don't need the bone, but it does create sort of some sort of density over there when you don't have it. So there is a little bit less resistance. So there is a potential for lack of power, guys have seen. But for the most part, I mean, Jose, again, had the surgery in 2019. Hit 2 home runs and 2 at-bats, and he's been fine, ever since. Other guys have come back pretty successfully, too. I think it's a little less worrisome than it used to be. I think Corbin Carroll had it this year. He's come back, and he's been pretty good this season so far. But I don't think Lindor's back, and if he is, he might not be playing well. I can't remember. But, yeah, I think the biggest thing for him is you just want to make sure he is fully healed and has that strength in his wrist built up, so when he does come back, there is no risk of re-injury or having to go back on the IL, because I think you want him back and you want him to stay back.
All right, so now this, obviously, I mean, we rewind probably 3 or 4 weeks at this point. I have people on this station, on social media, talking about the Guardians being good enough to compete for a World Series. They obviously went through a little bit of a downstretch, weren't showing that same type of offensive prowess. But how does this type of move, in your opinion, should it impact the Guardians and their approach heading into later in the season and what they're thinking about doing at the deadline?
Yeah, I don't think it changes anything, to be honest with you. For third base, I think you're just trying to hold tight for the next 6 weeks, whatever it is. I don't think you can maybe go out and at the deadline and try to trade for another infielder. I think in the short term, you're going to try to figure out if Arias and Schneeman can, how much, I hate to quote Moneyball, but how much in the aggregate can they recreate Jose, right? Defensively, I don't think they'll lose much. Arias is a great defender. Steeman's always been a good defender. So I think defensively they'll be just fine at third base. I don't know. You know, Jose wasn't having a typical offensive Jose year, but he still has a big presence in that lineup, and his base running is unmatched. You can't make up for that. That's going to be a hard part. So maybe you can get an infield. But I don't really know who's out there. I think the plan for the deadline always had to be finding some sort of part-time outfielder, so you're not running out Stuart Fair, like upgrading, like whatever it's Stuart Fairchild spot or whatever it is. And I think a left-handed reliever would still be a really good fit for them. You know, even if Heron's been better, they'll get Sobrowski back, but I think you'd like a little more certainty there, or maybe adding any kind of reliever to that bullpen would be hard. It would be a good addition for them. And I don't think they'll shop in the starting pitcher market, but you never know. It's always an expensive thing to go after, but their depth is a little bit thin if that's something they feel they need.
And again, Justin Lotta with us here on the hotline. So, I mean, I guess how does this open things up as we look at it for younger players with opportunity? Because we see the immediate move is activate Gabriel Arias and then also a very, I don't even know that it's weird, but DFA'ing George Valera at the exact same time. But is there a chance that this leads to younger guys getting more of an opportunity? It feels like the Clippers roster almost feels like an all-star roster playing down in AAA right now.
Yeah, I don't know where that comes in. Like, on the infield, the only guy you'd really consider would be like Angel Henao, but he's not quite ready offensively. I think he's not really there yet, and he has not played a ton of third base. He's played some, but I think you're going to stick with the guys you have in the short term there. I think the biggest move here, and this is, I think, trading Nolan Jones last week, which, you know, I wasn't really a big deal on most people's radar. And then, you know, the DFA of George Valera to re-add Arias from the 60 IL. I think that opened up the opportunity for both Cooper Engel and Ralphie Velasquez to play left field a little more. I think, obviously, Engel's going to get a shot at some point this year if they don't trade him, if that opportunity doesn't come before he's traded. I think it's going to come in left field. I think those two moves definitely increase the opportunity for them to get more experience in left field, so that way, if there is any opportunity in the majors for them this year, they'll be prepared for it, because, you know, Kwan can continue to play center and defense isn't the issue there, so you can stick with him despite the offense. Well, he's been a little bit better lately, but they definitely still need another outfielder, and Engel makes a ton of sense if they're going to move his position. I don't think there's a 0% chance Ralphie is up this year, but I don't think it's a very high percentage. So I think Engel's the big one there you look at, is those two moves, and if there's one guy they're going to add internally, yeah, I think it's Engel. I don't think it's on the infield.
You bring up Stephen Kwan, which leads us to a more big picture conversation as it surrounds Kwan right now. I mean, obviously he has not played the way you want him to. He's been great in the field, but the hitting just hasn't been there. Is this the type of situation where now you talk about there's another year of arbitration left, you just kind of ride this thing out and get what you can out of him on the field and then revisit this conversation next year? Or is there still a chance that, you know, there's a conversation to move Stephen Kwan by the deadline?
I mean, I don't think the trade value is very high. The defense is obviously still good, but offensively there just isn't much there, and nothing in the underlying data really points to a rebound. Like, there's just a lot of unfortunate metrics there that kind of back up why he's struggling or why he has struggled this year. So, the Guardians wanted more value out of him last year at the deadline, which is why they had offers and decided not to go forward with it, because they wanted more, and now his value has obviously gone down more because he's not playing well. So Cleveland's typically not a team that's going to sell low on a player, so I don't think the trade deadline here makes a ton of sense for them, unless they just got to a point where they decided we're just going to trade him for whatever we can get for him, and we'll try Cooper Engel or Khalil Watson, or we'll add somebody or something. I think it's unlikely, but I guess that is a path, but the value is just not very high. And yeah, I think right now he's a non-tender camp this offseason. I think you have to go into the offseason. If things don't improve offensively, yeah, the defense is great, but I don't know how you're going to pay him over $10 million, even if you settle out of arbitration next year for a Gold Glove outfielder. That's a lot of money for a Gold Glove outfielder who, you know, is not putting up a 700 OPS. So the way he's going right now, he's trending towards a non-tender candidate unless something changes.
Looking at the Guardians offense full picture, I mean, they put out the projected starting lineup for Sunday, which we talked about. Obviously, the three injuries between Daughter, Angel, and Jose were going to impact that, but it was not pretty to say the least, and probably a lot of people happy they actually didn't end up playing that game to watch the lineup roll out there. Is this, given the starting pitching, which has been back and forth over the last couple of weeks, you've gotten worse starts out of Parker Messick, some good starts out of Bybee, but everybody's been a little up and down. Is the offense without Jose going to be able to hold this team in a spot to keep them competitive, in your opinion, up to the next 2 months?
Well, that depends on how much you believe in the Chicago White Sox. I mean, even without Jose, or at least half the game on Saturday, and without DeLauder and Martinez after one at-bat each, they still managed to beat Tarek Skubal. I mean, Daniel Sheeman wasn't even supposed to start that game, and he hits a two-run homer off the best pitcher in the league, no matter if he's coming back from an injury or not. I think it depends on how I don't think the Tigers are, I don't want to say never, but I don't think they're a threat. I don't believe in the Royals. The Twins are okay, but they're going to try to trade guys at the deadline and get value, so I don't see them as a threat. I think it really comes down to how much you believe in the Chicago White Sox right now. I mean, Cleveland, because of the off day on Sunday and Monday, they altered their rotation. So Gavin Williams is now lined up to start game one of that series in Chicago next Monday. So the Guardians are, taking it a little bit seriously because they're right there. So I think a lot of that depends on the White Sox. The American League is not very good right now, which is good for the Guardians. So at the very least, that keeps them in wild card hunt if the White Sox are legitimate or not. They play, six times here before the All-Star break. The good thing about the timing of this, too, is, one of the weeks Jose will miss will be the All-Star break. You've got some off days here and there. You're playing the Twins, the Marlins, who aren't that great. So, I think if you're talking 40 games, can you go 20-20? Over that 40-game stretch without Jose, worst-case scenario? Yeah, I think you can. But it really does come down to how much you believe in the White Sox. But the rest of the American League is so mediocre that I think they'll at least hang in the wild card race, if nothing else.
And again, Justin Lotta with us here. Well, Justin, how much do you believe in the White Sox? They've obviously been much better than expected. They've got a lot of young production in the lineup. I mean, is this a team that everybody should be taking more seriously? I mean, even than we are right now, and I think that's much more seriously than we took them at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I will say the lineup to me is pretty good. They've turned around a couple of hitters prospect-wise that weren't either big-name prospects or they were struggling and looked like they were going to flame out, and they've really done a good job turning those guys into good prospects. Their starting pitching is extremely iffy. Davis Martin is their ace right now, and he looks good. Anthony Kay and Sean Burke are solid. Eric Fetty's kind of up and down, and I think they're going to get Noah Schultz back soon, and then we'll probably see Hagen Smith at some point, who is terrifying for a team full of left-handed hitters like the Guardians. Their bullpen is really iffy, so, I feel like at some point things are going to level off. I know they just took 2 or 3 from the Dodgers, but you know what? Cleveland also took 2 or 3 from the Dodgers in L.A., in April. So I think they'll level off at some point. The big thing about rookies is you've got a ton of guys in the lineup for them that are really young. The league's going to adjust to these things, that the adjustments they've made. So I think the league will also adjust back. And I just don't think they have the starting pitching. Now, they could go out and trade for a starting pitcher if they really believed that they were legitimate and take these chances, because their farm system's not bad. They've got some nice players in the farm system they could move. So, I truthfully, it's going to get me in trouble. I'm truthfully not a really big believer in the White Sox, but they're playing very well without Murakami, who's their biggest hitter. So I would be stupid to count them out.
I mean, going back to the Guardians here for a second, obviously, I think everybody takes a little bit of a gasp when you see Chase DeLauder get hurt, leave a game. A contusion's nothing to be worried about, but I guess... how much of this leads to any sort of fear of, if you're already down Jose, the opportunity of losing, especially one of the two young guys who have been pretty solid for you, puts a real hole into your starting lineup or your lineup as a whole?
It does, yeah. I mean, I think your chest gets a little bit tight anytime that you see Chase DeLauder running after a fly ball or having to run out a ground ball pretty hard, right? I think everybody gets kind of nervous just given his history. I don't know that I can say it's not a big deal, A, because of his history, and B, it's a rib contusion, or they're calling it that for now. You know, they were a little bit more optimistic on Martinez, saying he could be available off the bench on Sunday, and they expect him to be good by Tuesday. They were a little more ambiguous in DeLauder, which makes you kind of nervous what they do between today and tomorrow before they kick off things in Milwaukee. But, yeah, you absolutely need DeLauder, and he's got to, you know, he's kind of struggled over the last month or so. He's not hitting as much. He had a better streak here at home this last homestand. I think he had a six-game hitting streak and eight hits in those six games. So you need DeLauder. You need him to figure things out offensively, keep drawing walks, find some more power, because you're going to need every little production you can get in this lineup, from Martinez to Lozano, who's been a little up and down too, and you're going to need David Fry and Schneeman to step up, and Zardo's got to be consistent. You're going to see more Rhys Hoskins, so everyone's got to step up. But yeah, I think the big mantra this offseason, right, was if they weren't going to add externally, it was going to be, we're leaving options open to play the kids, and now you've got Bazan and DeLauder up, and with Jose down, that's where you're going to fall back on, is those two guys, and that was the whole offseason plan.
I just, we got about 30 seconds here. Arias added back to the roster, going to be playing a decent amount of third. Is there even a question at this point whether or not you keep Arias over Rocchio in any capacity?
Ooh, no, I'm not over Rocchio. I think it's going to depend on how he does at third base in this cameo. I mean, this is probably his last big shot, I would say, with the Guardians. So it's hard not to keep Rocchio the way he's played this year.
No doubt about it. Justin, appreciate you setting aside the time as always. Always good to catch up with you, and hopefully do it sometime here throughout the Guardian season.